21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
It's all about soul. It's all about faith and a deeper devotion. It's all about soul. 'Cause under love is a stronger emotion. She's got.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Noah Dankner runs our board. If you've ever wanted to know how to talk to your animals, or other people's animals, you know, join us this hour. Terry Diener, author of The Pets Speak and a Maryland-based animal communicator, is going to share with you, as she does her students, just how you can practice and eventually have the ability to hear what animals are saying. Many people have this natural gift already developed. Some of us, like myself, have been cultivating it since childhood. Sometimes we all know a special animal comes along and it makes it clear to both us and those around us that they hear you and you hear them. Join us for a wonderful hour with animal communicator Terry Diener, and later in the hour, we hope to take some of your calls. Thanks for rejoining us again, Terry. It's been a number of years.
It has been, Zoe. It's great to be back.
So, of course, the most logical question is, how did you get into talking with animals?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You said, you know, just before that some of us have been cultivating since childhood. I did not. I sort of fell into it. In the mid-90s, my 15-year-old cat started having a change in his hygiene behavior, and it felt like this very abusive relationship. I loved the cat to pieces, and he was doing this to me. It was really hard not to personalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And my vet at the time, was a holistic vet, tried acupuncture and homeopathy and herbs, everything she knew, and nothing worked. And then she asked me almost offhandedly if I'd consider talking to an animal communicator. And I didn't know that they existed. But I said sure because, you know, I was desperate and I was open to lots of different things. And desperation is often the way people find their way to a communicator. So based on a photo of my cat and me on the phone, this woman who lives outside of Philadelphia says to me, "Please don't be offended by this question, but do you color your hair?" I wasn't offended. I was ticked. What did coloring my hair have to do with this cat pooping all over my house? And she said there was a hair product that looked like it was a dye that he was allergic to. And it was leaving him with a chronic headache and a low-level depression. So I looked at my shampoo, and it had red dye in it. And the litter box lived in the bathroom. So he couldn't get away from whatever it was he was allergic to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I threw the shampoo out, and she told me that I could cleanse the space with coffee grounds and fresh mint. You just put them together into a bowl, and it absorbs toxic energy the way baking soda absorbs odors.
Hmm.
Well, in about 3 hours, the paw of depression lifted off of the cat, and he started using his box. And I called her up and said, "I don't know what you do, but I want to do it too."
Mm-hmm.
And then I took her workshop, saw how I got in my own way. I would receive like a telepathic message, and then it would change. I didn't know that I was changing it. It changed to something more elaborate and exotic. And I really saw how it's like I had to elaborate on it because simple wasn't good enough. So I spent the whole morning seeing that, and in the afternoon we were working with a lot of different animals who were at this workshop. And I was sure I was making everything up until one moment in time I connected with one of the little resident dogs. And I tuned in the way I had been doing all afternoon, and this dog just, it was like talk to the paw. I felt like I was a fly on the wall in a total another consciousness, and he wasn't going to talk to me. And then I heard, wait for me, in my head. So I'm trying to figure out where that's coming from. This little guy launches himself about 6 feet horizontally and takes off up the road after his buddies. It's like he was done with us. He was tired of these humans asking him the same stupid questions. What's your favorite food? Where do you like to sleep? What's your favorite toy? And he just wasn't playing anymore. He was not going to play anymore. And then as that afternoon wore on, the thought occurred to me that, you can do this. And I went, oh, God, help me, I can do this. I was bored with my job, but I didn't think I was going to wind up doing this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've been working for the state.
Right, right. Now you're working for the state of the animals.
And it was like, I can't do this anymore.
It's a beautiful thing how people come to their own discoveries. Earlier, we were speaking with Dr. Evan Alexander and how he had his own coma experience and near-death experience, and it was a total life transformer, so that now he can go around the world literally talking with people and helping people sort of open up to their own reservoir of extraordinary consciousness. And this, too, you know, and our audience knows that I have a love of trans-species telepathy, and I'm sort of like committing my life to it right now as I'm coming out, Terry. I'm actually coming out.
I hear you.
I'm being revealed. I am not just an intellectual scholar. I am a telepath. So it's so fascinating, though, because everybody has this ability, and I think everybody who has an animal experiences this in some way in their own fashion. But it's not always, I mean, you get to know your animal, you know what their meow or their bark or their cry or what it is they want. And people go, how do you know that? Well, you know, because you live with them. Right. But we're talking about something a little different from that kind of knowing. Maybe you can share with us some of the very basic things you do. Like, if I were to come to your workshop and I'd say, how do I talk to my dog? Tell our audience a little bit about what we do and how you do it.
Be happy to. First of all, our animals are tuned into us all the time. So they know what we're thinking and feeling.
Totally.
And if we think that we're saving them from anything or saving us from something by like not telling them that they're going to the vet, or if we think that they won't know that say like somebody in the family died and you know all these people are around and it's like they know everything. So we need to tell them. We need to tell them what's going on. We need to tell them what to expect. They'd like to know what their routine is going to be, because they are creatures of routine.
And purpose.
And purpose.
They always ask, and so what's my purpose?
Right. Sometimes they know.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of times it's to partner with us around various things.
Yeah.
Lots of times it's to help us. I find so much in my client system of reflection, where the animal will reflect back to the person something that the person is ready to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Like they know it before we do.
What do you think? I mean, my experience of this is that animals are empaths, so that they, as units of consciousness without this edge that says, this is my edge and this is your edge, they do experience our thoughts and our feelings, not just our actions, so that if we're upset, they feel that upset and they take it on, even to the point that some people have said that our animals will take on our diseases because it's all vibrational, which makes total sense to me.
Yes, because
everything is frequency, then the tumor is a frequency and the laughter is a frequency, mm-hmm. and the animal is experiencing those wavelengths, whatever those are, through its own biocapacitor being.
Right. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes a step further in lots of cases. Sometimes they are actually reflecting back to us our own emotions. So that if I had one client whose cat started peeing out of his box, and which, you know, when an animal is, their communication is different from ours. So if we don't understand what they're trying to tell us,
right.
they will up the ante until we pay attention to something. And
right.
even if it's a matter of just guessing until we get to the right thing, they will keep doing the behavior until we get whatever it is they want to tell us. And there are times that the people are, say somebody is really anxious, or somebody is dealing with a very deep abandonment issue. They may have an animal who is also dealing with an abandonment issue, and they will play it out mm-hmm. in such a way that the person has to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we will often do things for our animals that we don't do for ourselves.
That's for certain.
So
do for animals what we won't always do for humans. It's an
absolutely.
Extraordinary relationship
absolutely.
Of love.
Absolutely. So this one lady, her cat was really dealing with a deep abandonment issue because he was abandoned on the streets in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
and her daughter found the cat and brought her home. And it turns out that the this cat is just, she's just full of anxiety. Well, so is the person, because her job is being, it's not cut out. It's going like on call.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she has all these worries around money and, you know, and then what she's going to do. And also deep abandonment issues, because she said, as we were talking, she remembered telling her mother that she was adopted,
mm-hmm.
even though she wasn't.
Hmm.
So it's like we parallel each other.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking to a person, generally a session lasts about half an hour, which is usually enough to get what we need, unless it's very complex or somebody's very talkative. Usually the person. And so I find out from the person what they want to know. Sometimes animals are very chatty and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're very loyal and they won't reveal things if mm-hmm. they don't think it's okay to reveal it. So I find out from the person what they want to know. And then I have them tune into their animal by visualizing. First, I have them get into a really quiet, settled place, because you need to be as settled and calm as you can be so that the animal is reflecting settled and calm rather than upset. And I have them tune in by visualizing their animal and calling them a few times just to focus. And then I tune into all of that. I introduce myself to the animal, usually as a friend of the person. Sometimes they tell me they don't know me. Like, basically, the question is, how can you be a friend if I don't know you?
You've never been here before.
Really. Sometimes they go looking for me in the heat vents.
Yeah.
It's very funny. But yeah, they're very concrete, and they're very literal, just like a five-year-old child is.
Yeah.
So once we have that relationship established, and I like to do it by phone rather than in person.
Me too.
Because it really reduces the amount of time.
I also find I actually can't do it in the presence of the owners, because I pick up too much of the owner and they get in the way of my hearing the animal.
Yeah, that too. That too. I become very aware of all the other things around.
Yeah, I find actually, well, it seems that most of the work I do is at a distance, so I've just come to accept that that's how I do what I do. My radio mm-hmm. works at a distance, my healing works at a distance,
yeah,
my animal
yeah.
communication is at a distance, mm-hmm. my research is at a distance.
Right.
If only I could, like, teleport my food, I wouldn't have to grocery shop. Although, did somebody just say
wonderful?
There is such a thing as delivery? All right, so when a person wants to talk to their animal, first they visualize them. They get centered, obviously, prior into your heart. You call their name three times. Mm-hmm. And then what? Do you ask the animal a question, or do you wait for the animal to talk? What is what you recommend to people?
Well, because we're so close to our own animals, it's sometimes hard to just let them talk.
Yeah.
So what I recommend is you start off just making the connection until you're both used to being in each other's heads. So it can just be sitting there and sending the animal a feeling of love and appreciation, visualizing or embodying a quality that you really appreciate about them, and then sending that. Because animal communication is first and foremost a heart connection and then a head connection.
Mm-hmm.
First with the heart, then with the head.
Right.
So you make the heart connection, and then you visualize whatever it is you want to tell them, and send that from your mind to their mind, because they communicate in first in feelings, then in images, and thought forms, and then finally they understand words and they relate to words. So you want to make sure everything is aligned. If say you have a dog, and the dog jumps at the door whenever somebody rings the doorbell. The dog is obviously excited that somebody's coming to the door, whether it's for protection or whether it's just excitement because there's company. And the dog starts to bark. And what do you do? First of all, what are you feeling in that situation? You're usually feeling anxiety because you know what the animal's going to do, and you visualize the animal jumping and barking. And then what do? Then we say stop, or we say sit. So our words are not in alignment with the feeling and the image.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were a being who responded first to feelings and then to pictures and lastly to words, that sit or stop is going to be, it's totally lost in the intensity of the other senses. So what people need to do is get themselves really centered. Like as soon as they start to get anxious, because you're not going to stop that. But you start to get anxious and then say to yourself, stop. And then some version of, he's going to do what I ask him to do. So there's that knowing that that you're in charge of this, that you can handle whatever's coming up. And then you visualize the dog sitting or doing whatever you want him to do, and then you tell him.
Right.
It's not magic. You know, it's not going to happen tomorrow. But that kind of consistency, the animal will get used to not getting mixed messages.
For people who say, oh, well, I had an example just recently. Somebody called me about their dog, and their dog piped in immediately from the back room and said, tell them to take my collar off and put me in a halter. They had had this dog in one of those spiked choke collars,
which I can't stand.
Anyway, and the dog was saying the same thing, you know, get this thing off of me. It hurts me. It makes me uncomfortable. It's not fun to go for walks. I love my person, but they don't know what they're doing to me. So I told this person who didn't call me for a dog reading, but the dog was so vocal knowing that I'm listening.
And I said,
you really should try this dog in a halter leash because it's really miserable and you shouldn't really have a dog that you have to cause harm to control. They went out that day and switched to a halter. And that dog came back to me that night and said, oh my God, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. So I called the person and I said, did you change? They go, yeah, I did today. So it's an interesting thing how whether it's our own experience with another human at a distance, an animal at a distance. I find it harder to talk with my own animals than other people's animals because I have my own emotions invested in them.
Right.
But when somebody feels that their animal is suffering and there's no medical explanation, what do you do?
Well, first I tune into the animal and I find I'll scan the animal's body and see what I feel, because sometimes I'll feel something in a particular organ.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not finding anything, I will sometimes do energy work with them. Sometimes they just want to be heard. I definitely look for the reflection. I definitely look for, you know, does the person have a kidney issue or whatever whatever the problem seems to be with the dog, or the cat or the horse. Generally, dogs and cats do the most reflecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I will recommend a holistic vet because holistic vets and conventional vets each have their place, I think.
Sure.
And sometimes a holistic vet is going to have an approach, going to find something that's more systemic. So I'll recommend that. I don't do any kind of medical intervention, diagnosis kind of thing. I will do energy work, but I then send them to the vet, or we'll make a recommendation for a holistic vet that I've worked with, who I think is the right fit. For the person, and because the person has, it's like a pediatrician. The mom has to be comfortable as a pediatrician.
Sure.
Who's treating her child, and owners have to be comfortable with the vet that's treating their pets.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, look, we have to take a little break. We already have a caller online, Pat, who wants to talk about her cat, and we'll be right back. And if anybody else would like to have a moment with Terry Diener to talk to your animals, give us a call at 410-922-6680. That's 1-800-WCBM-680. Terry Diener is our guest, and she is an animal communicator. You can learn more at her website, www.petspeak.com.
Hi, this is Carly Matamore. I've enjoyed being on the 21st Century Radio Show with Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, talking about the white lions of Timbavati. To learn more about the white lions, go to www.whitelions.org. Or to learn more about the work that I do with Ahara Spiritual Community, go to www.ahara spiritualcommunity.org. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Zoe Hieronymus. Terry Diener is our guest. She's an animal communicator and author of The Pets Speak, a Wingspan Press 2009 release. And you can learn more at her website, take some workshops, I took a wonderful workshop with Terry years ago, www.petspeak.com. So, Terry, we have Pat who's holding on, and I want to take Pat's call, and then we'll come back to some of the questions I have to help the listeners practice talking with their animals and others. Pat, welcome to 21st Century Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. We so rarely take calls of any sort.
Well, you touched on a subject earlier, and I just wanted to relate an incident. My husband was stricken with cancer almost 19 years ago, and in the last several months before his death, he was at home, and we had a cat. His name was Sam. And my husband's hospital bed was in the sunroom, and Sam would perch in the corner and stare at my husband, and my husband would, it bothered him because it was this constant, you know, irritation. And he would say to me, Pat, would you please come get Sam? And I'd go to get Sam, and Sam would curl under my husband's hospital bed, and I couldn't reach him, and Steve would say, oh, let him go. And when I would leave the room, Sam would come out and sit in the corner. Okay, this went on for weeks. My husband died a week after his funeral. Sam started throwing up. Now, this was in December. He had been to the vet in September and gotten all of his shots up to date and everything. So I took him to the vet, and she kept him overnight. And he had cancer throughout his body in the same organs that my husband did.
Wow.
And I really truly believe that he sat in that corner trying to take on my husband's illness.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can convince me otherwise. Anyway, I had to have him euthanized because it was just too much for him to go through all of the chemo and everything. But anyway, that's my story about Sammy.
Well, thank you.
And but I have a cat. His name is Chassie.
Is this a question or a story?
It's a question.
Okay.
Chessie's deaf. We adopted him and about a year and a half ago, and he can't hear, but I truly believe he understands everything that I'm saying to him. I talk to him all the time, and as does my mother. And how does that work? Is he hearing me, or is he reading my thoughts? What do you think?
I think he's reading your thoughts.
You think that's what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we think the same way that animals do, only we're not aware of it. We think in pictures and feelings also. It's, you know, the telepathic process is something that I think is encoded in our DNA. I think it's how we communicated when we were cave people. We had to have something more than a few hand signals and grunts to have survived and evolved into who we are today. And once we develop the ability to speak, we kind of back burner telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. It's part of us. And we're not aware of thinking in images and feelings. All we're really aware of is the words. But the animals tune into our thoughts, and they know what we're thinking.
Okay, so
consider, Pat, thanks for your call, that consciousness is, and everything has consciousness, whether it's a tree or a cat or a human. So that's why shamans or indigenous peoples talk about being able to hear the stories of the trees or being able to understand what the tiger is saying or why the holy swan has just brought them a message from the heaven realms. So, Terry, when you work with animals, when people talk of near-death experience, they talk about unconditional love. When people speak of altered state awareness, they speak of this divine love. Share with us what you have found out from animals along this area.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well,
so
all humans talk about when we arrive at unity awareness, it's love. And animals, we all experience, are so loving.
Oh, yeah. They live there.
Right.
That's where they live. They live in that realm of unconditional love. And, you know, that's how, they're so forgiving. You know, we could do almost anything to them, and they'll come back and nuzzle up against us. You know, animals who have been very abused, you know, will stay with their abusers. I'm convinced that it's to help them get past some of that in their own process. You know, the owners help them get past that viciousness or that
cruelty.
Unthinking,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, just unthinking behavior.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you see so many films today. I was thinking about trans-species telepathy for a moment, when not just humans are involved, but different species are involved together, an elephant and a dog, a zebra and an ostrich, you know, uh-huh. a cat and a bird. And you'll see these now. They've become very popular YouTube films where people will upload their own. And it's as if in the animal kingdom there is an awareness of coming together, just as prophecy is always spoken of, the lion will lie down mm-hmm. with the lamb. And that whole notion. And one almost can start to begin to see that this care is going on, and probably always have, but we haven't been watching. We haven't been paying attention.
We haven't been paying attention.
And now that we're paying attention,
we pay attention to when the dog chases the cat.
Right.
Or when the cats fight, or things like that. We're not paying attention to the other side of that.
So when you work with the various clients and people call you and they say, well, I have two dogs and one's an old dog and one's a young dog and they're not getting along, and you have to talk to both animals because there are two different points of view plus the owner's point of view. Talk to us about that. When you have multiple animals in a household, how an owner can sort out what's happening, perhaps, when they're not at home.
Well, we can certainly talk to them and find out how they spend their days.
Mm-hmm.
That's always one thing you can do. I'm almost at a loss for it.
Well, I'll just speak from my own experience, is that when these animals present pictures, and you said it earlier, they never lie. They will withhold information, but I used to joke that if the CIA wants spies, just give somebody a dog and then have an animal telepath tell you what's going on in the house.
Right.
Because
yeah,
it is true that when you do these animal readings, they reveal things about the household that oftentimes the owners don't want you to know, like somebody's
right.
abusive, somebody's an alcoholic, somebody's throwing things, somebody's, you know, whatever it is. And the animals will tell you. I can remember one client and I had to just sort of frame it like, I think your dog's watching too many domestic violent movies. And then the person admitted, no, that's really what's going on in our household. So there is a candor about animals that humans don't have.
I agree. Yes, I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes I find that they are very loyal to their people.
Totally.
And they won't tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, it's like, thank God somebody's listening.
Right. So, all right. So now let's share with the audience how when a person calls with a particular problem and you talk to the animal and then the person goes about their life, do they call back and say, oh, my gosh, now this has been great, or now we have a new situation, or what happens as a follow-up?
Sometimes they do. I always ask people to keep me in the loop
mm-hmm.
and to send me an email, let me know what's going on, just so I can keep track. Sometimes people do and sometimes they don't. And I leave it up to them to do that, because otherwise I feel like it's too, it's overstepping,
mm-hmm.
overstepping bounds. Because sometimes people will do what I suggest and sometimes they won't. And, you know, and the feedback that I get is that I'm pretty accurate on what's going on. And lots of times the suggestions, actually the situation changes. The animal stops peeing inappropriately, or the anxiety goes away, or you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of feedback I get. And sometimes people will say it worked for a couple of days and now he's back to doing whatever he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do another session to see if we can get any more information, or they'll just try the next thing on the list that we'd already discussed.
Sometimes people want to communicate just as humans want to communicate with their loved ones who have passed over.
Uh-huh.
That they want to communicate with their animals who have passed over. Share with us some of your experience along those lines.
First of all, it's always a wonderful experience because people feel so guilty if they've either let an animal suffer too long in their mind, in their perception, or if they've euthanized prematurely. And the animals are always there. I mean, the unconditional love just carries over into that dimension. And they're showering their people with it. They go to, I call it the spirit hospital, when they cross over. They're greeted just like people, just like we are. They're greeted by animal souls, human souls, and then they're like whisked off to a spirit hospital, and they rest and they're tended to very gently, very lovingly, until they're ready to be present again. And then sometimes it takes a week, sometimes it takes a couple of days, and sometimes it takes, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks before they're ready to actually be available to talk to us. And then they, it's just like having the same kind of conversation that we're having now. It's just, connection with an animal in spirit is just as available as connection with animals in body. And those, sometimes people will want to know, well, what's he doing? What's he doing in spirit? And I might get a little glimmer of things, but very often I get, it's not your business. It's not yours to know yet. I think it's really funny. Like, you'll know when it's, you'll know more when it's your time to be here. So they sometimes very gently put you in your place.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time now, and, you know, when I interview people about topics and we say, so what's going on in this topic? What's, you know, what's the general discussion these days? Is there anything in general happening from the animal's perspective that's changed, or something, a consistent story? Like, as I'm saying, like when I talk to quantum physicists, they all talk about the awareness of consciousness affecting matter and whatever. Are the animals all talking about anything in common these days that you can see, like a common thread?
The only common thread I really see from animals is they are very sad at what we're doing to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
They're aware of it. They can feel it. They feel the tension. They feel it in the environment. They feel it from their people. And they just, it's like, sometimes they just don't know what to do with themselves or with us around it. And all I can do is tell them that this is human stuff, and you know, we're dealing with it. And yet your job is to be the best possible companion you can be, because that's what will best serve your people. But in terms of those other kinds of themes, I do find that animals are evolving. I find that many more animals can understand more abstract things than they did 10 years ago. Abstract concepts, ideas, their understanding that everything is not in the moment, that people will be coming back in a while, whereas before they didn't. It was like, if you're gone, you're gone. Now they're really understanding that gone does not mean gone.
Mm-hmm.
People are coming back.
And of course,
that's the evolutionary shift for them.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I know in Rupert Sheldrake's beautiful book, How Animals Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, what they discovered, and we did an interview on this with him years ago, is that as soon as you start to think about returning home, your animal prepares for you. So if you're 1,000 miles away and start thinking about the flight that you're going to be taking, your animal starts waiting at that point. So I always remind people that you can tell your animal you'll be gone 4 moons, or you'll be gone to 2 sun-ups. I mean, you can actually use physical cues for
Absolutely.
Them that they experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that seems to help my animals when I say I'll be gone for 3 moons. I'll be back on that 4th day. They seem to be a little less restless. But look, we're going to take our last break of the evening, and then we'll be back. And if there are any people who would like an animal reading, we will have a moment for it at 410-922-6680. That's 1-800-WCBM-680. Terry Diener is our guest. Follow up with her online at www.petspeak.com.
Hi, I'm Rob Guttrow, author and medium of Pets in the Afterlife, Lessons Learned from Talking to the Dead, and Ghosts and Spirits Insights from a Medium. You can find me on ghostsandspiritsinsights.blogspot.com or on Facebook and Twitter. I'm under Rob Gutro, author and medium. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Terry Diener is with us. Her book, Pet Speak, Wingspan Press 2009 release, and her website, petspeak.com. So, Terry, people generally want to know how they can discern the difference between actually hearing their animal by writing down the images they see. And that's what I tell people to do. Just if you want to talk to your pet, get in that place, call their name three times internally, quietly to yourself, place them in your heart, and then ask them the question and write down the first images you see. And don't analyze it. Don't like try to figure out what it means. Just draw what you see or write what you hear and then go back to it. But people always ask, how do you know the difference between projection, imagination, and actually hearing or seeing?
That's another really good question, though. When people start with this process, they're sure they're making it up because it's just not something that they're sensitized to. So what I tell people is pretty much what you're telling people is to just write it down. Or it's easiest to work with animals of friends.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than your own.
Right.
Because you're way too invested in the answer, and am I doing it right? And if you do it with your friend's animals, you'll be able to get immediate feedback. Like, I had one of my friends ask me why her cat followed her around all the time. And what I got from him was that's what buddies do. And I didn't know that she called him Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Winston. And I didn't know that was her nickname for him. So sometimes you'll get those kind of flashes, and people will go, yeah. Another woman I knew had a dog, and the very first, I didn't really know her very well at that point, and her dog was saying something about heart to heart. And it doesn't have to make sense to me if it makes sense to the people.
Right.
And I said to her, you know, he's saying heart to heart. Does that make sense to you? And she goes, yeah, that's what I say to him every night.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get those glimmers, and if you can capture them, those moments of clarity like that, and remember how that feels in your body, because your body will tell you when you're accurate. That's why it's harder to do it with your own, because you're sometimes just way too anxious to be that tuned into to that part of you that says yes when things settle in, when the truth settles in, and you go, yeah, that's right. I make the analogy to people who are studying acupuncture, and in their first term, they're sent out to take anywhere from 500 to 1,000 pulses. And it's simply to sensitize their fingers to 12 pulses instead of the 2 that we know. So the more you can just tune into an animal and see what you get, you'll start to see almost patterns in your own energetic response. To yes, this is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But don't expect it to happen overnight. It is a process. It's not something that we are practiced with.
You know, and it's the same thing that you do as a telepath with humans. And I've said to people, I used to practice this way. I would, at the grocery store, stand next to somebody, see the image that came to my mind about what they did, either professionally or as a hobby. And then I would just ask them. I'd say, I know this is a really strange question, but do you like knit brown sweaters for babies? You know, whatever it is. I'm just making that up. And they go, whoa, where'd that come from? So people are very generous. That's why I say it. And it's a wonderful way to practice. Or when you're at a restaurant, you know, try to tune into somebody at the booth over next to you and see what they do or see something that's meaningful to them and then just ask them. And the more my experience, probably like yours and anybody else who does anything well, the more you practice, the better it is, whether your intuition is for an animal or you're working telepathically to help people at a distance who are in harm's way, or you're trying to communicate with your children who don't live in the same state and you don't want to call them at 3 a.m. on the phone, but you want to tune into them and send them a message or here, there. So all of these are we're talking about the same aptitude.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Animals are just so beautiful. You know, and I do agree. You said that they're aware of the earth changes, and I do agree with you entirely and completely. And I was interested in what you would say, because that's been my experience as well. And I've recently, I shared with the audience, had an experience of all these magnificent spirit animals, the white tiger, the white lion, the white bear, the white wolf, all coming to me together en masse, all at once, in this extraordinary luminous moment, saying that they have something they need to say to humanity. So I'm working on a new book about all of these incredible what we call spirit animals, but they are all epicenters of whole cultures, whole continents, whole traditions. And it shows us how much humanity and the animal kingdom are collaborating in evolution. It's not like they're below us and we're above them.
Right.
We just have different opportunities and obligations.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And they've been around longer than we have. So in our arrogance, sometimes we think that we're superior. But in reality, they've been existing longer than we have.
Well, they certainly have traditions, and my dear friend Gay Bradshaw has written about this in what's called transspecies psychology, which is that, you know, there was never any doubt for those of us that love animals, but for those who are really sort of dense materialists who don't believe that animals are sentient beings, they feel and have community and memory and history and tradition.
All you have to do is watch some of those documentaries and stuff on different animals. There's one about the elephants who traveled, I don't know, like 20 miles when the man who fed them regularly in Africa someplace died.
Yeah, it was they when the gamekeeper. Yes,
and
exactly.
They, and they made a pilgrimage. To say goodbye to
and
them.
Before it had been announced to the world, before humans had been told the elephants were arriving at his home to pay their respects, even before it had been verbalized, which is also why we see thought travels faster than the speed of light. In fact, we now know that consciousness travels faster than thought itself, that thought travels before the thinker has the thought. That's extraordinary. I mean, they've proven that in the laboratory.
That is extraordinary, yeah.
So I sometimes think that animals are like that. They're sending these messages before they're actually giving them to us, if that makes any sense.
But
as a whole.
And you know, their communication is very quick, what I found. It's like they have no need to, they don't have need for long conversations.
Exactly.
I've had people say to me, well, what else does he have to say? I go, like, nothing.
Exactly. And to
like
the point.
To say, and then they're off to the next thing.
You know, when you talk to a human and they go, well, I don't feel well, and it's because my mother this and my father that and my brother and my husband and my children. And the dog will go, I don't feel good.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
It's so interesting that they don't lay on all these layers that psychobabble. There's no psychobabble with animals.
No, there's none. That's totally out of their realm. Just like lying is out of their realm. They don't lie. They may not tell the truth, but it's more about omission than commission.
Yeah, and it's interesting how humans project onto their animal that their animal is doing something to them.
I know. Yeah,
versus
yeah,
the animals having their own experience and the human is there watching it.
Right. But yeah, because we don't understand, in general, as we don't understand all of that, because it's not our human experience, it's hard to wrap our brains around it. If people ask me, like, how do you know whatever the thing that was that came up, my answer to them is, you know, I'm not really sure how. I just know that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the if I know that I'm clear in my communication with them, and I know that I'm like a blank slate for them to you know, answer to. If it doesn't fit with my understanding, I just go far out and just say, tell me more. Because we can learn so much from them.
Yeah. And also, I have found over the years that I know it's true because I couldn't have had the thought.
Yes.
You know, sometimes animals will say extraordinary things. I remember this one dog who was having surgery, and the owner called and said they were very concerned. And I said, I'll tune in. And I tuned into the animal, and the animal was having a wonderful dream experience of flying around the neighborhood and seeing where the owner went every day. And they goes, oh, this is what it feels like to see where the owner goes every day. So it's they do tell you what they need to say. They don't tell you necessarily what you want to hear. That's what I'm
exactly.
trying to say.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. That's right. It's like a child who starts telling you about the spirit tour in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you tell them no, you don't see those things, how quickly they shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And how much they believe you. No, they didn't see those things.
Right.
With the animal, if you keep tuning them out because it didn't happen or it didn't exist or you don't recognize it, they're just going to stop talking to you and talk to somebody who will listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about, I mean, I know you've had so many people who, you know, are working with grief and their animals passed over and they go, well, I know that they're going to come back to me again. Talk to us a bit about that when animals say, oh, yeah, I'm coming right back. Or, hey, no, I'm coming back as a horse this time and you're not likely to find me.
I find that most of the time our domestic animals do come back to us at some point. They might have another incarnation someplace. They usually come back as the same species, although sometimes they will say they want to try being a horse, you know, the next time. But if they're not finished with us, whatever our agreements are, because they make we make agreements with each other that the animal is going to come in at a certain point to help us with a certain thing. And if they're not finished with us around that particular thing, they'll come back fairly quickly. I mean, I've had them come back as quickly as one day, which is really unusual. But it was a situation where a woman was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she'd been a devotee of alternative healing for her whole life until she was diagnosed, and then she went strictly conventional. And her cat knew that she needed to go to an alternative healer. The cat made herself sick
mm-hmm.
because she knew that her person would get an alternative healer for her.
Fascinating.
For the cat. Mm-hmm. And I called being foisted by her own petard. The cat made herself so sick that she couldn't get better. And she died on a Tuesday and was back on Wednesday.
Wow.
And she was at the SPCA in Baltimore.
Terry, I'm going to have to say goodnight and encourage our audience to follow up, take a class with you, and practice with their own pets. www.petspeak.com with Terry Diener.
Stimulating talk around the clock. And breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News.